This is Main Street Nation. It's all about culture, community, and business.
It's about the places that we call home. It's our hometowns. It's our main streets.
It's about the challenges small town merchants face and what they can do to win.
You have strong views on things, don't you?
It's a little bit. I think
you
picked it up from the last time.
I did.
Every downtown is unique.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Christy. I have a new business. Why should I open up on Main Street?
Downtowns are our past, but they're also our future. They're the places where we make memories, the places where we do business with our friends and neighbors.
Now, here are your hosts, Jeff Sloan and Christy Terraro.
Okay, welcome to Startup Nation's Main Street Nation radio show. This is the show for people and businesses that love their hometowns. We're talking community, culture, and Main Street business. If you love your hometown, if you believe in the power of shopping locally, if you're a Main Street business, this is the show for you. Stick with us. Great show ahead.
Now, back to Main Street Nation with your hosts, Jeff Sloan and Christy Trevorrow.
Okay, we're talking local hometowns, downtowns, Main Street. It's all about local. Christy Trevorrow, co-host of Main Street Nation Radio. Great to have you on the show.
Great to be back. We got another great show ahead.
We do. Before we get to that, let's talk a little bit again about what you do. You're a Downtown Development Authority executive. That's why you're on the show. You've got a little bit of expertise to bring to bear on the subject matter.
I do. I've been doing that for on and off for about 16 years now.
In Rochester, Michigan.
Rochester, Michigan.
And you won an award in 2013 that kind of recognized the good work you're doing for that community. It was the
Great American Main Street Award. So that's sort of the Oscar, if you will, of downtown revitalization. It's given by the National Main Street Center. About 80 plus communities around the country have won that over the years. But that's something you work hard for. It's not something you just fill out an application and cross your fingers. You actually have to get engagement from the community. People have to write letters and explain why it's important and why they support you and why they think you're worthy.
And this whole thing about, so we know you care about Rochester, Michigan. I know I've visited the conference, the National Main Streets Conference. I know you care about the subject matter at large. You care about small hometowns across the country. And so do I. And that's kind of, that's why we're doing this show. Why, I mean, let's just kind of tell our audience again in a couple of words. You go first. Why is this important?
I think that when you look at the heart of things, everything comes down to people and places. And when you think about Main Street downtowns, nothing typifies that more than what we're talking about. In downtowns, if you can create a place that people want to be and that have ownership over and call their own, that's something. And that's meaningful.
Hometown pride.
It is. And it's making memories. Those are the memories you're going to carry with you. And I think to a certain extent for children, having that place, that community, it starts that great building block for moving forward in life.
And when people refer to their hometowns, I've been watching this carefully lately and listening carefully. People say, my hometown is Birmingham, Michigan. My hometown is Rochester, Michigan, whatever it may be. There's that possessive kind of, you know, that's that thing about pride. It's mine. That's my hometown. It's part of my identity, part of who I am. Right. I mean, if you tell someone, you know, if you say, introduce yourself, one of the things we always say is, I'm Jeff Sloan. I live in Birmingham, Michigan, right? Right away. I mean, mm-hmm. It's one of the key hallmarks of how we identify ourselves. This is important stuff. Central.
It is. And I my friends tease me because they're always like, oh, downtown stuff again. But it just goes across so many facets for me. I know we're going to get to this in a minute. But before we came down, I happened to stop over at Eastern Market here in downtown Detroit. And just the energy and the vibe there, all these people from all walks of life coming together to enjoy this space and this place.
Right. Community.
Community. Community. There's just something there.
Yeah. And for me, you know, the hometown thing evokes that feeling of nostalgia and, as I said, pride and identity and all those things. But being the host of Startup Nation Radio and the founder of StartupNation.com, the basic premise, a big part of the show, is that the way you preserve and protect America's hometown cultures from that threat of homogenization that seems to be occurring at some level across America is to support America's hometown businesses. And that's a big part of what we're talking about as well.
Absolutely. I mean, because you can have a beautiful downtown, but if it's not full with vibrant stores, places people want to go, well,
and if there's not commerce going on, it's probably not going to be so beautiful, because the way you keep the sidewalks updated, the way you add features to a hometown is you make sure there's commerce going on.
Right. And it's a whole system. Yeah. One thing depends on the other. If you can have a beautiful environment, but maybe your stores aren't full. You can have full stores, but maybe you don't have flowers planted. Or you have a great place with great businesses, but there's nothing going on because you don't have an organization that's bringing everybody together and engaging people
exactly.
in what's going on and creating events and giving people a reason to continue to come and to have that ownership.
And so that's what this show is all about.
Yes.
And Christy, we've got a good one today. Help us tee up what we're going to talk about today on the show.
Well, I don't know if anyone is aware, but it is National Farmers Market Week. And we already had this show in the hopper because we think there's so many different ways that you can attack Main Street. One of the great ways is the local food movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people don't really think about it, but more and more people are thinking, where did my food come from?
Right.
Is it from someone from an area that I know? And it's becoming important. I think for a certain piece, it was marketing, but now it's really people are getting that it's important. For us in Rochester, Michigan, we started our farmers market 16 years ago. And it was more because we thought it was something kind of cool and fun.
Right.
Now, farmers markets are a standard in downtowns. It's an amenity. It's expected as a part of your community that you have access to those type of local goods on a regular basis for your community.
And again, that's part of not only the ingredient, but part of the hallmark and part of the indication of the whole kind of shop local movement. I mean, you know, farm to table. I mean, best to buy your food farm to table, right?
Absolutely. I was looking online to get some information for the show, and I noticed that from 2006 to 2014, the number of farmers markets in the country has shot up 180%. There are over 8,200 farmers markets in the nation right now, and they're all in small towns.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people travel. I mean, I happen to know yesterday morning, my parents got up, was it yesterday or maybe? No, it was this morning.
Mm-hmm.
They got up and went to the Royal Oak Farmers Market.
Sure.
So, you know, that brought them from Birmingham to Royal Oak. There's the power of a local farmers market.
And we're going to talk a lot about that because it is about the goods and there's so many things to talk about that, but it's also about the community and culture that's created within the farmers market environment.
Sure, sure. And there are uniquenesses from farmers market to farmers market. And so on today's show, we're going to be talking about one of the biggest and best in the country.
We are, Eastern Market, one of my very favorites. I've been going there since I was a little girl with my parents. We used to go to the meat market there, and I get to talk the butchers out of a big dog bone for my dog.
And our guest, the
yes.
guy in the center of making it all happen today,
you
were kind enough to arrange for the show. We're going to be bringing on in this very next segment.
Dan Carmody. He is the president of Eastern Market Corporation, a friend of mine because, as you will find out, he actually was a Main Street guy. And then he made the move to local food and farmers markets. And we're going to hear all about that move and what he's doing now and the amazing things that are happening at Eastern Market.
That's right. This is truly one of the great markets in the country. And this is farmers market on steroids. I mean, this is the big time.
Yes.
So it's going to be great to hear from Dan. We're going to do that on the show right after we take a quick break. We'll be right back with you. Stick with us.
You're on Main Street Nation with Jeff Sloan and Christy Trevorrow.
Okay, Christy, you spent your morning at Eastern Market
in
downtown Detroit. What's going on there?
A lot is going on there. It's amazing because you can walk from shed to shed and you can see everything from granola and honey to sunflowers and the freshest fruits and vegetables and just so many things. But then there's food trucks going on and there's entertainment and there's street performance.
And people and activity.
People,
community. Yeah.
People.
What did you see that was something really unusual and cool that you could only see at a farmer's market?
I don't know if I call it unusual, but it was definitely cool. I loved seeing all the families. And I'm not just talking about the families that were there buying product, but the families behind the stands that you can sell that the farmers, it's generational. So it's not, you know, the older farmers who are giving their wares. There's young kids working at those stalls that you can tell are the grandkids, children of those farmers that they're carrying on that family business.
Right. And that's, you know, you talk about identity. I mean, those booths there, those families that are behind the tables of those booths, that's, talk about pride, and you know that's their business. Those strawberries are part of who they are, right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
that's the thing about when you're going to a farmer's market and you get to meet the farmer, you know that what is in front of you, that was just in the ground 24 hours ago.
In the ground and part of the family's, part of the family's identity and pride and who they are and what they're all about and what's important to them and of course, how they make a living.
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, we're going to be talking about farmer's markets today, aren't we? And about one in particular.
Yes. Well, we're going to be talking a lot about the local food movement, which is so prevalent right now. But I think one of the superstars of any kind of farmer's market when you have that conversation is Eastern Market here in Detroit. Dan Carmody is in studio with us. He's the president of Eastern Market Corporation and a former Main Streeter, which is how I got to meet Dan a few years ago.
Now, what's a Main Streeter?
He is part of Main Street. So he actually used to work for a Main Street organization. He used to run one in Illinois. And then he also does resource teams for National. We all call ourselves Main Streeters, whether you're a Main Street director, whether you're a volunteer, a board member. At some point, you get to wear that badge. And it's sort of like the mafia. You never get out.
Right.
So regardless of what Dan decides to do, he's always going to be a Main Streeter.
Well, with no further ado, Dan, welcome to Main Street Nation Radio.
Howdy. Hey. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Good to have you. So, how'd things go this morning? Everything?
A little bit of rain, but it's picked up. Been a good day so far.
Okay. What? So you are responsible for making that all go. Tell us a little bit about your background first. How you get to be in a spot where you're in charge of that? Such a cool thing. What's your background?
It is. I've been here about 8 years. Interviewed for the job about 8 years ago this weekend, and Eastern Market pretty much had me at hello. On a Saturday morning. It's truly one of the unique places in North America.
It is.
My background really combines parts of food and place, which is the job I was charged with doing 8 years ago. And that's, I grew up in Chicago, Oak Park, one of the greatest communities in the Midwest. This talk of walkable communities cracks me up because what other community would you want to live in since I was born? But as a kid, I also spent time in Western Iowa. My dad bought a farm, so I had this like urban-rural thing going on. I saw enough farm life that I became a city planner, saw that there was too much work involved in agriculture.
Yeah. Right.
So I clearly chose urban planning as a career. And then I fell in love with Rust Belts and failed economies and trying to figure out how to solve them. And so the rest of my life has been as a planner. Took a 10-year hiatus as a bar-restaurant owner, another food experience. And then since 1988 have run a series of organizations, some Main Street, some not. Mm-hmm. But they're all community-based development organizations with the principles of Main Street of work.
Yeah. And tell us about Eastern Market. I mean, here we've been referring to it as such a significant thing. I mean, but give us a little color for those.
Yeah, next year, Eastern Market will celebrate its 125th anniversary. And through that time, we've borne witness to the, food is something we kind of take for granted, but over 125 years swath of history, it's changed dramatically one way, and now it's changing dramatically another way. And so when we started...
Kind of returning to its roots a little bit.
In a way, slightly different, I think. Yeah. 1891 to 1925, we were monopolists. We were the wholesale distribution center for the city, for the region. Huh. 1925, a terminal opens up on the southwest side, serving rail farmers from California and Florida. And until 1950, we were monopolists in the wholesale produce terminal business. And then every grocery store chain, national and most regionals, built their own wholesale distribution centers. And we still have a wholesale market, which is pretty rare for a large public market. 30 to 40 farmers show up midnight to 5 a.m. Monday through Friday, sell to independent grocers and smaller restaurants throughout Detroit. That's pretty unusual. But the local food movement has kind of given that wholesale market a new lease on life. Mm-hmm. We're still declining, but there's a chance to grow it in some new and interesting ways.
And then there's the whole, if you will, retail booth space where they're selling direct to the community, so it's direct to consumers.
So Saturday is the big hog. It's what we're known for. We've added Tuesday markets. We've added Sunday markets. But Saturday is our big show, 30 to 40,000 people per Saturday this time of year.
Incredible.
As many as 275 vendors, peak season, probably today we're probably 225.
And the breadth of what you could find there as someone coming to Eastern Market. It's not just strawberries. I mean, it's pretty broad. To give us some colorful, end-to-end.
It's always changing. The mix is changing. When we took over, and Eastern Market Corporation is a nonprofit that took over management and promotion of the market for the city in 2006. The market is still owned by the city. We simply manage it on their behalf. They had previously allowed the sale of anything but fresh fruits and vegetables, plants and flowers. So since 2007, we've been attracting local food makers. And so you got 40 to 50 vendors now that sell cheeses, sell pastas, pierogies,
pies.
Soup to nuts. And
soup to nuts. Even on Easter, you can buy chicks. Right? You can.
The live animal thing is met with an interesting PETA meets older culture.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite Saturday mornings was watching a young PETA-like customer get all upset when a Eastern European grower put a live goose in the back of someone's truck. It's kind of a moment of cultural clash.
Yeah, I can imagine. But
that's what markets are.
Those are outlier things. You don't see that every day. The focus is obviously the fresh produce. Fresh produce. Yeah, and then flowers and plants and so on.
It's all of those things. And, you know, it's a very hard business to make a living in. So many of our fruit and vegetable growers get their annual cash flow by selling herbs and flowers in the spring. And so it's a really mixed sort of, you know, business model that has many different adaptations. So we look for growers far and wide to come and set up shop at Eastern Market, but those food makers are just as important. And trying to create that diversity of product that brings customers back is really important.
And I think a lot of people are becoming a little bit more concerned about where their food comes from.
Absolutely.
Which I think is really important. There, you had a quote in an article in Huffington Post last year where you said it's like the craft beer industry.
Craft beer metaphor is spot on in the sense that starting in 1985 when the first microbrewery opened up, they have incrementally taken away market share from big beer. Today they're just shy of 20% of market share, which is incredible. They've done that without government regulation. They've done it all about customer narrative, talking about what people want to drink from one customer to the next. You see it with wine. You see it with spirits as well. You're seeing it in food, and you're seeing a lot of evidence. It's just not quite as crystal clear as it is in craft beer. The last few weeks, there's been some incredible shifts in the seismic nature of food businesses. Campbell's Soup Company bought Ferndale-based Garden Fresh Gourmet, largest fresh salsa maker in the country. Pretty small company by global food standards. The reason Campbell bought it is the same reason Campbell Foods bought Boltinghouse Juices, Boltinghouse Farms that make the juices you find in most of your. Because Campbell Soup's sales are cratering so fast, they can't grow based on their old model. They know if they're going to survive, they have to get closer to companies that are closer to customers. Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal about Cargill's profits. They're actually lost money this quarter, and they recognize that consumer demand is changing so fast that they have to change their business model. Cargill is one of the largest privately held companies in the United States.
What is the key factor or factors that are driving that?
People are aware that the food we're eating is killing us. And so the amount of sugar, the amount of fats that are in our food, the high processed diet is, in fact, largely responsible for 19% of our gross national product going to healthcare. And so long term, people are taking a little bit more control of their lives. Now, it's not just fresh fruits and vegetables. It's, I think, all you can look at prepared products and how do we make them healthier just as much as fresh fruits and vegetables. For example, Garden Fresh, while they're the largest fresh salsa maker, is also the second largest hummus maker in the United States.
Right.
They sell more hummus in California than anyone else. Why? They make that product in Ferndale, Michigan. It's not a local product in California, but they use a high technology called high-pressure pasteurization, which replaces heat with water pressure as the way to kill bad stuff in your food.
Bacteria, yeah.
It doesn't kill the good stuff, and it doesn't use heat, which changes the flavor, and you get the same extended shelf life. So here's a case where thinking through our current food system, you don't put preservatives in. You treat it differently with a higher technology.
Right.
You end up with a healthy product that lasts 45 days.
And what's interesting, and I mean, let's be candid, it's probably cost more, right? Consumers are proving. They're willing to pay more.
Yeah. I mean, good food does cost more because we as a country have chosen to subsidize the growth of six commodity crops, corn, wheat, beans, that really is used mostly to feed livestock and create proteins that are priced below market price, what they should be.
And is the movement, in your opinion, accelerating? Are we on the cusp of even further?
No, I think it's accelerating quickly. Millennials are hugely far more interested in this than their baby boomer parents or grandparents.
And just quickly, we're going to go to break in a second.
Yep.
Following on that point, millennials, why?
What's that?
Why are – I know. I mean, I happen to know, you know, a little bit about the demographic. They like to be in an urban center, like to be downtown community. They like to be, but what's driving those millennials relative to what you said?
I think they're paying just more attention to what they eat and what they drink. It's gone from them being taken for granted to thinking about it.
Interesting stuff.
Yep.
Well, speaking of interesting stuff, we're just getting rolling here.
We are.
We're going to come back after this break. We're going to pick it up again with Dan. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear and learn more about not only Eastern Market, but the entire movement of this whole kind of return to our roots.
Local food.
Farm to table, local food. Mm-hmm. Loving it. Be right back after this break. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Main Street Nation with Jeff Sloan and Christy Trevorrow.
Welcome back indeed. We're talking about local hometowns, main streets, farmers markets.
And I think when we were talking about this before we went to break, we were talking a lot about the food, which is so important, that people are thinking about what they're eating now. But there's another reason why I think people are seeking out markets, and it's for the community aspect of it. Do you see that at Eastern Market?
Yeah, since 1891, we've had two principal products. One is food. The second, and I would argue more important, is conviviality, that social capital piece. We're at Eastern Market on a given Saturday. 30,000 to 40,000 people come across generational lines, across race lines, across income lines, and generally leave feeling with a smile on their face, feeling better, not because of the food they ate, they're taking at home, but just because they had a better time with their neighbors.
I wonder how many people that come, if you ask them, did you come for the conviviality? If they would ask.
I don't know if they'd hit that check.
It's a word I like.
I like it. That was impressive. I like
staff
that.
I've had staff that have had to look it up in the dictionary.
I was going to say, right.
Detroit gets banged up for being a food desert because there's not been many national grocers here since the Farmer Jack split out in the 90s until Myers and Whole Food came back. But on a Saturday, we get 60 to 70% of our customers from the suburbs of Detroit. And while Detroit's seen as a food desert, few people pick up on the fact that Metro Detroit probably has the best and deepest bench of independent grocers in the country. Papa Joe's, Nina Savazio's, Joe's Produce. I mean, the list goes on and on. Those people are driving past all those great places with food, better, quite frankly, simpler to shop at than Eastern Market, which were a bit chaotic on Saturday. They come to Eastern Market for the experience, and that experience is all about being with a lot of different people.
Yeah, and it is about experience. I mean, that's what we talked about in our shows. We've been talking about downtowns, and that every downtown is different, but it's about delivering that experience, creating a place that people want to go, that it isn't always about ringing the registers and getting people to shop at the businesses. It's about getting them to come, feel a part of it, get that ownership, and have that experience that makes them want to come back again and again.
The unexpected.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think you do more at Eastern Market than just have the stalls and have the wholesale market. You guys do events down there, and your Flower Day is insane. Talk a little bit about
Florida. Florida is insane. We get about 200,000 people in one weekend. We pretty much tell our friends not to come. It is chaos beyond compare, but it's a great event. And again, each of our major market days is a special event. One of the real great challenges with farmers markets is trying to make sure you stay focused on consumers and customers rather than visitors and tourists. And so if you go around a country, place like Pike Place Market in Seattle, which $1 million view of the Pacific Ocean, you know, they have a real problem because tourists crowd out customers and make it more difficult to shop. And so we're very conscious of that at Eastern Market. And so Flower Day is a lovely event, but you couldn't necessarily do that every weekend. So you have to strike a balance between where's the party and where's the product.
Right. Absolutely. And I know I've been noticing in downtowns everywhere that I go when I've done National Main Street Resource Teams that towns, when they're first getting started, one of the first things on their list is start a farmer's market.
Yeah.
Because they know it's a quick way to draw people in and that's something people are looking for as an amenity.
And again, it's you're selling product. Special events in downtowns are great, but they're often the balm that gives people a reason to come downtown when there aren't many reasons.
Right.
And so with a farmer's market, it's regular commerce every week. You know, so on the side, there's work that I do with smaller towns around food system development, and using a farmer's market as a way to build a portfolio of businesses market-driven around this interest in local food. And so while there's been this meteoric growth of farmer's markets, we're still only at about 5% of food comes from local sources versus 95% from the big global gigungus companies.
I was going to ask you that question to frame it out for us and put it in perspective and in context. What percentage now of, and what's the trend been?
Well, the trend is moving. I mean, Christy's right. The farmer's market is a great indicator. The number of farmer's markets is a great indicator of the trend of interest in local food. But big food still owns most of the market share. But we're seeing, as we've seen more clearly in craft beer, that local food sources are winning market share. You see it with Garden Fresh being bought by Campbell.
Do you guys have an ability to track sales?
We do not, actually.
You
we're
do
old
not,
school.
Right?
So
right.
We rely on our vendors reporting to us whether they're doing better this year than they were last year. And the good news is most consistently they have been, despite Metro Detroit in the last 10 years probably going from about 30 farmers markets to about 70 farmers markets. So there's a lot more choice, and yet our numbers still are tracking upwards. So that's encouraging.
And something that we're finding in our town is that we have some smaller businesses, specialty foods specifically, that are trying out our market as sort of a pop-up to test the market to see if they would want to open a business in our downtown. This happened a couple times to us. Our Holy Cannolis, which I know is at your market, they were at our market. They still are. But they ended up opening a storefront once they tested the market. And we have someone right there now called the Cheese Lady.
When you think about public markets or farmers markets, this whole notion of pop-up markets is kind of silly because we've been doing it, you know, since the dawn of mankind, and we've been doing it since 1891. Every Saturday, every Tuesday, every Sunday, we are a pop-up market.
Right.
And so, you know, we have had some great companies like McClure's Pickles. We don't take credit for their birth, but we take some credit to help them along the way.
Sure.
They started selling at the market, great exposure. You know, they're today, they moved from making grandma's recipe and mom and dad's back porch in Troy into a former auto parts manufacturing facility with 35 employees about 2 miles from the market, packing pickles for sale in 50 states, 4 provinces, and 2 foreign countries. So that growth is what could happen. And our role at the market increasingly is trying to create a fertile ecosystem, not to make sure that all the 300 food vendors that we work with become McClure's Pickles, because many of them just want a little ancillary income. That's fine.
Sure.
But if we can double the number that come out of that pipeline, that creates real jobs for Detroiters that we desperately need.
Is this a juried system where in order to get into the market you have to be approved, or can anybody just pay the fee and have a booth?
We have an application process, and that whether you get in quickly or not really depends on what you're selling and how many of those types of products we already have at the market. So obviously there's a lot of chocolate chip manufacturers in Detroit, and we can't accommodate all of them. But if a grower of exotic Asian vegetables wants in at the market, we would find a table for them yesterday.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
For example.
Okay, so let me ask you, if I'm out there listening and I think, this sounds kind of cool, I'd like to have a booth at the farmer's market. Knowing what you know, are there things that tend to do better just generally every time?
Well, there, you know,
product areas that tend to do better. And are there product opportunities maybe that you see that might be interesting for people to keep an eye on?
You know, I think the simple bottom line is the generic everyday things that are doing poorly, whether you're ConAgra
So what would that be?
If you're a grower, for example, don't bring me mums in the fall and don't bring me impatiens in the spring. Bring me a hanging basket that's unique and distinctive.
Yeah.
You can sell that. If you're a farmer, we don't need any more pepper or tomato growers. But again, Asian vegetables or some rare Hispanic pepper that nobody's ever seen.
We have a
guy, Vince, the mushroom guy, grows his own mushrooms, does a brilliant job.
I saw him today.
And, you know, that's a niche that he has done very well at. So it's finding those underserved niches with high quality product and price. Is not so important to some of the success there.
Do you guys have any requirement in terms of volume that you need to be able to fill? I mean, you're not going to want someone to come in, take a booth, and be out and, you know, have a few backyard mushrooms.
Our daily rental stall fees range from about $50 on the low end if you're a farmer with a year-long contract to $125 if you're just renting for a day and you got a specialty food product. You got to be doing $1,200 to $1,500 a day to really justify the – if you're going to pay that much for rent and you got to make $1,000 worth of product, you're going to have, you know, $800 of cost in being there.
So like what market economics tend to do, it obviously doesn't in this setting too.
Yeah. So this is the free market economy.
I mean,
there's, you know, so we try to stay out of
at its most simplistic form.
Fundamental level. We try to, again, we're looking for diversity of product. Another point that's really important for us, and we were selected by MIT as one of the 15 most iconic public spaces in North America. We're really proud of that. And that was before this spring we debuted a plaza area. We never had a place for anybody to sit and enjoy themselves until this spring.
Yep.
We were selected for that economic democracy, as Christy pointed out earlier, about people on either side of the table, on the seller side or the buyer side, could come from any walk of life.
Yep.
That
yep.
is critical.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is really something we try hard to maintain.
Well, and I know we've been talking about fresh produce and the opportunity to buy things fresh, but there's also an opportunity to talk about prepared food, whether in the restaurant setting or otherwise. And we're gonna move right into that. You know, I'll tell you, Dan, when we select a guest to come on the show, we obviously try to pick an expert, someone who knows their stuff, someone who stands out from the field. We've certainly done that with you. One thing we don't really know is how someone's going to be on radio. And I think we can now safely say that you certainly can handle yourself.
Oh,
Natalie.
Thank you very much.
Not only do you have the expertise, but you can articulate it very well. So
don't
what we're
going
to do.
Him.
So here's what. Well, I'm going to encourage you to do one thing. I'd like you to stay on as a kind of an additional co-host for the rest of the show. Feel
be
free
happy
to. So I said we go on
you
to the next.
You better not be scouting him.
Could I point out one factoid as you head into the farm to table movement?
Yeah.
March of this year is interesting. First time ever in U.S. history, more food was purchased for consumption at restaurants than in grocery stores. So the millennials are also driving not only healthier eating, but most of them don't like to cook either. So farm to table is becoming even more important in terms of local food movement.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
And Christy, when we come back, we're going to hear from
Chef Rennie from 12 Farms in Hightstown, New Jersey.
And we're going to focus on what might we hear about in that segment.
We're going to be hearing from him about how everything he puts on his table is from one of 12 farms within about a 25-mile radius to his restaurant. It's amazing.
Very cool. That's taking it to the next step. All right. Stick with us on Main Street Nation Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
You're on Main Street Nation with Jeff Sloan and Christy Trevorrow.
Indeed. Welcome back to Main Street Nation. You know, I want to call out special thanks to our sponsors of not only Startup Nation Radio, but the Main Street Nation Radio as well. Comerica Bank, Pappas Financial, great supporters and sponsors of not only the entrepreneurial community, but Main Street businesses across our community. So, Christy, it's been a very interesting show, and we're going to keep it rolling in this segment. What do we have?
Well, we were talking all the way. We started with farm. We said we're going to go all the way to fork. And so where we are going to go now is talking about farm-to-table restaurants. This is something that is a huge trend.
I thought you were going to go with the farm-to-fork.
I was there, but now we're going in. So we're going to be going from our farm-to-table. So this is the concept when you talk about that it's things that are coming out to your table that they come within, say, a 25-mile radius of your location. And so when I was doing a little bit of research, I found this great new restaurant just opened in Hightstown, New Jersey, back, I believe, in April. And I contacted Chef Rennie and asked if he'd be willing to come on and talk to us about his concept and all the exciting things that he's doing. And he said yes. So, Chef Rennie, you're on the air with Main Street Nation.
How are you, Chef Rennie?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the show. Well, what a concept you have. Why don't you, put it in your own words? What's behind it? What drives you? What's the essence of the concept?
Sure. I personally believe that when you're dealing with local farmers, there's a benefit to the local economy as well. And so the money that I am spending is not going to a larger corporation. It's going to small individual family-run operations that stays local. In addition to that, I'm getting produce that I'm serving tonight that was picked either this morning or the day before. And that makes a difference for the quality of the food. By going direct to the farms, I'm getting, in some cases, a discount, and it's cheaper. And so that makes a difference as well in the cost. Most of the farms that I'm actually using are organic as well. And there's definitely a trend to small family owned farms that are organic, at least here in New Jersey that I see.
So give us an example of what's on the menu tonight.
So for tonight we're running a duck special. There's Griggstown Farm in Princeton, New Jersey that raises chicken and duck. We have ribeye, when the ribeye is coming from Mallory's Grazing Meats, which I think they have 1,800 head of cattle here in Jersey. We always have a pasta special. The pasta, we are getting the flour from a mill in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, Castle Valley Mill. It's basically locally grown wheat that's milled that we use for our pasta.
And tell us about the customer. Who comes in the door for this?
So it's a mixed bag, actually. We definitely have a lot of people who have concerns about their food, so they're interested in non-GMO. We have people who are gluten-free, gluten intolerant, vegetarian, vegan. So all sorts of specialty cases are coming here. But in addition to that, there's a lot of families that just they want to eat healthy and they want to eat good food. So my goal is I want to supply the best possible product at a reasonable price. So our dinner menu is running $15 to $28, and our lunch menu is $8 to $10, and burgers are, I think, $11. So it's a reasonable price that people can afford and come back.
Right. And that's great. And I think it's interesting, when I did my research, when I reached out to you to join the show today, I was looking, I noticed that you could have gone anywhere, but you chose to locate in a Main Street community, in a downtown. Can you tell me a little bit about that decision?
Here too. Mm-hmm. So Hightstown historically has been the center of the area here. So it's surrounded by farms. And Hightstown was where the farmers would bring their produce. And then it would be put on to a train, I guess, up to New York and Newark and to Philly. And so it always was sort of an agricultural center. And so that was one reason why I chose the area. But it is a really, really cute little town. It's an old mill town where the mills don't exist anymore, but you still have the pond and the waterfall right in the downtown area. And I see Hightstown as going through a renaissance, where there's more interest in people wanting to live in an area where you can walk around, visit some shops, and be able to walk home.
And I think that's something, that's a trend that you see across the nation. Absolutely. I noticed when I was looking at like your Facebook page that you guys are doing more than just food. You have art openings and you're doing entertainment. Tell me why.
It's the same thing. It's that we basically hang art here from a local artist, and we don't charge a commission. So in the 6 months, we've sold $5,000 worth of art. And then each Wednesday night, we have a musician come in and play. But we make sure that they're playing original music and not covers, because we want them to, one, develop their own talent and their own voice. But again, it's sort of share the wealth, where we benefit from bringing in and having beautiful art on the walls and having wonderful music, and they benefit as well. And again, we're keeping that money local.
And you know, Christy, we the little tagline for the show is community, culture, and business. This is a perfect manifestation of all three rolled up in one. I mean, there it is. Yeah. And the sense of coming in, having a unique experience, tasting the local food, knowing it's fresh and healthy, knowing it's local, knowing it's unique, and it's related to the land that you're on, you know, very directly, and then being able to see the local artists and the local music. That's it. Kind of, as I say, rolled up all into one.
Right. And Chef Ronnie, for you, I mean, you guys have been open since April, correct?
We actually opened up in February. Soft opening. Mm-hmm. And then we had our grand opening in April. Yes.
How's the community responding to what you're putting out there? I noticed that you just had a lunch, so obviously it's becoming more popular. But was there a lot of farm to table in the area, or are you one of the first?
There's a couple in Princeton, which is probably about 10 minutes from here. But there really isn't anything outside of Princeton. And so that was one of the reasons why I opened up here, is that there's a void and people want it and there's a huge demand. We've been packed since day one. When we opened our doors, we opened to a full house, and we are full pretty much every night. I had put together my business plan and we far exceeded the expectations. And so that's, the opening of lunch was much sooner than I expected.
Dan Carmody, director of the Eastern Market. By the way, Chef Rennie, are you familiar with Eastern Market in Detroit?
I'm not, actually.
Okay, well.
Not yet.
Not yet, exactly. I'm sure you will be soon. But Dan, this is not surprising, this kind of thing, is it?
No.
I mean, this fits right into your area of expertise.
It's happening, you know, really all across the country. Restaurants in cities after city are applying the same principle, although it does sound like the chef has, you know, with the art and the culture is really kind of tied it all together. It's really inspiring to hear.
It is. It really is inspiring to hear. Mm-hmm. It's all about local.
It is. And you know, we talked about this on our last show. We talked with Cops and Donuts, that they could have just been Cops and Donuts and just opened their door and just had people come in, sell donuts, and off they go. But they actively chose not to do that. And that's what you hear more Main Street stories, and this is another one with 12 farms. They chose to be a part of their community, that they're not waiting for the community to come to them. They're engaging the community and making themselves a part of it.
Yeah.
And adding to that culture that you were talking about.
You must, Chef Rennie, I mean, you must feel a sense of hometown pride being now a cornerstone, a centerpiece, you know, I would imagine, of your community, at least, you know, in your way. It's got to feel pretty good, doesn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I think Hightstown is a very special little community, and you know, I'm hoping that within the next 3 years we're going to see a lot of new business pop up in downtown Hightstown.
I think what you see in a lot of Main Street communities is that the restaurant and the bar scene are far easier to get established than the daytime retail scene. So they're often the canary in the coal mine that it's hard to go anywhere if you don't have some decent destination dining places.
Mm-hmm. It's key. I mean, you, being where you sit as a Downtown Development Authority executive, you know the mix of retail, restaurant. You got to have that right balance and mix.
Of course, and I can tell you in Rochester what started the whole wave of people coming into downtown, the restaurants came first. People follow food.
Interesting. Yeah.
As much as we say we don't, people love food. They follow food. And that's what started. We had one great business owner, Bill Cruz, that he opened two restaurants downtown, was putting out a beautiful product that people wanted to come for. And then the businesses started popping up around
it. And I think it's not just food. To draw a very specific distinction, if I were to open an Arby's or not to pick on a specific brand, a McDonald's, whatever, you want to call Wendy's, doesn't matter. It's not going to have the same impact.
Correct.
That's for sure.
Yes. So, no. You don't see
I've
me lining up
through this. I've gone through this before where in Ipswich, Massachusetts, Ipswich was a sleepy little town. And after a friend of mine opened up a coffee shop in town, suddenly the town changed. And we had an art gallery open up, then another art gallery, then a toy store, then a deli. And pretty soon you had a really thriving little downtown community. And it just takes time. So, and I'm in it for the long haul. So.
Yeah, and that's very similar parallels in, to a large extent, the Cops and Donuts story, which you referred to. You know, they were, here was a bakery dying, going out of business in Carroll, Michigan, which was, you know, not the most exciting town, you know, with great expansion in the area of commerce. And all of a sudden, with one great local store, this bakery, Cops and Donuts, now, what do you say? They've brought 1 million people into Carroll over the last 5 years.
Yeah,
they've added four stoplights in the town. You know, these are good. They got high school kids instead of leaving the town. They're looking for a job at Cobb's and Donuts and a Chinese restaurant, he said, is opening
in
the town. That all started. So it parallels, Chef Rennie, exactly what you're talking about. Listen, great stuff. Thank you, Chef Rennie, for being on the show. Continue great success to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you being on the show. And Dan, wow, great to have you on.
Good to be here.
Eastern Market, gotta love it.
It's good stuff, and it's just, it's about exactly what Dan was talking about, that there's a couple different products, but it's about places, it's about people, it's about all those things that make a community.
Well, and it's one thing to have the intuition, the supposition, the vision that that's what it's all about. To hear it unfold like we did on this show today, it is what it's all about. No doubt about it, it's what it's all about. We'll be back again with another great edition of Main Street Nation Radio. Watch for us. Hey, and check us out on Facebook.
Yes, check us out on Facebook. We're on Twitter. And check out our Instagram. Got some great photos of Eastern Market today.
Right on. We'll be back again. Look forward to having you in the audience in a future show.